live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration.
Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government.
The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg, sound off. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
President-elect Joe Biden readies his economic team. We've got the list, we've got the names, we've got the reaction, and fresh reaction from Gary Cohn. Remember him, the former National Economic Council director, speaks with exclusively with our very own Emily Chang. We've got a lot to get through. Red headline crossing the Bloomberg terminal just within the last 60 seconds. Wisconsin makes Joe Biden win official, and the governor will name the electors. Again, Wisconsin has now made the Joe Biden win official, and the governor is set to name the electors. No surprise there, but figured we would bring you that breaking news headline. Back now to the lead story tonight. We begin. As president-elect, Joe Biden rolled out the first set of nominations for his economic team, formally announcing his selection of Janet Yellen to be Treasury Secretary, Neera Tanden to lead the Office of Management and Budget, and Cecilia Rouse to head the Council of Economic Advisers. Biden also announced his intent to nominate Adewale Adeyemo, a former senior advisor at BlackRock, to be Deputy Treasury Secretary. Adeyemo is a Nigerian-born attorney and president of the Obama Foundation. It all comes as Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell is cautioning lawmakers that the U.S. economy remains in a damaged and uncertain state despite progress made in the development of the COVID-19 vaccines. And speaking about those vaccines, we have sound on the development of those vaccines. Dr. Anthony Fauci saying over the weekend to Fox News Sunday that there's a light at the end of the tunnel.
There is light at the end of the tunnel because we will really be seeing vaccines soon. We likely, almost certainly, are going to be vaccinating a portion of the individuals in the first priority before the end of December.
Meanwhile, the U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams is promising a rapid December vaccine as well on Fox News Sunday.
Within 24 to 48 hours after submitting their EUA, we, from a federal perspective, have promised and have set everything up so that we can quickly review those EUAs and hopefully start sending out vaccines, again, within 24 to 48 hours.
But even as the vaccination effort continues to intensify and Fed Chair Jay Powell warns about the economic long-term effects of the virus, former National Economic Council Director Gary Cohn says that likely Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is going to have to get congressional help in order to get more stimulus going. And Gary Cohn spoke exclusively to Bloomberg's Emily Chang.
I worked with Chair Yellen when she was chairman of the Federal Reserve. We worked extremely well together when I was in the White House. We had a very good working relationship. I find her to be very practical, very pragmatic, have a very deep and broad understanding of the U.S. economy. And I'm very confident that she's going to step in and do a very good job. She needs the help, though. She needs help of Congress to get stimulus going.
Wendy Benjaminson is a Bloomberg Politics editor, and she joins us now. So there's the lay of the land, Wendy, as we begin another week in Washington, D.C. Do you anticipate, based upon Bloomberg's reporting, any significant hurdles for someone like a Yellen to get confirmed to the Treasury Department?
Hi, Kevin. Thanks for having me. I don't really see a huge hurdle ahead for Janet Yellen. I think, you know, people will be making some noises about her because it's partisan Washington. Josh Hawley, the senator from Missouri, came out and said he worries that she's anti-worker and pro-corporate, which is a weird thing to hear a Republican say about a Democrat, but it's 2020, so, you know, anybody can say anything. So there's going to be some random opposition to her here and there, but Janet Yellen, I believe, is universally admired and respected and will be confirmed. Neera Tanden is another story.
Well, that's where I want to go, because for those who are not familiar with Neera Tanden, she, of course, is someone who leads the Center for American Progress, which, of course, is a dominant left think tank here in Washington, D.C., and they have a history with sometimes on policy clashing with the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party. What do we know on that front?
Well, Neera Tanden, yes, she worked for Hillary Clinton in 2016, and she was they did clash with the Bernie Sanders people, and, you know, as you all remember, that was a very bitter fight for the nomination, and the Sanders people feel it was stolen from them. So there was still some ill will there. But I think in the interest of Democratic unity, which at least for the moment is still a thing, we can talk again in February about whether that still exists, but for the moment it's still a thing. And progressive senators, Elizabeth Warren and other people like that, have begun to line up behind Neera Tanden. So there are others who are taking little pot shots and showing video of her on C-SPAN talking about Social Security cuts, which, of course, Medicare cuts, which would not be good news for progressives. But I think she's going to also have a hard problem with Republicans on the right. An aide to John Cornyn last night said her nomination is dead on arrival. So if Republicans maintain control of the Senate, that could be a big problem. But Joe Biden knows the Senate, and he saw this coming, I believe. And I think he may be setting it up so that they can say, oh, look, you mean Republican senators, you won't confirm this daughter of immigrants who grew up on subsidized housing and on food stamps, you know, and she has this great, compelling personal story, and she wants to help people, and you're going to throw her out on the street? Fine, you know.
But typically, in the past, typically there's only one or two or a handful in which the opposition party is able to stop from getting confirmed. So do you think that President-elect Biden would rather see Janet Yellen confirmed than Neera Tanden? Not that there's a calculation being made, but to your point.
Yes. I think Kevin, you're absolutely right. I think he would much rather have Yellen sail through, have a lot of these other people sail through that you mentioned. And Cecilia Rouse is head of the Council of Economic Advisers. She'd be the first African-American woman to head that group. And so if Neera Tanden doesn't get confirmed, I'm not sure it would be the worst day.
She was also very instrumental in helping to create the Affordable Care Act, which, of course, is something very controversial with Republicans.
Yes. Yes, she was. And that will certainly be brought up again and again and again. So if this is one that gets left on the roadside, it may be. But we will also see how willing the Republican Senate is willing to work with Joe Biden, as he has promised throughout the campaign that, you know, the fever will break and they'll all work together again like they did in the 70s.
Do you think, or which nomination as of right now has the most risk? Is it Mayorkas? Is it Tanden? Or is there another name that you're hearing could have a hurdle?
From this economic team, at the moment I would fear the most on this economic team for Neera Tanden.
Okay, let me ask you a follow-up. What happened with President-elect Biden's ankle today? I saw it all over my social.
Oh, he broke his foot last night.
How?
He was playing with his dog and he tripped.
Oh, no.
It's so sad. And it's like, dude, you know, you're too old. Just sit in the rocking chair. Throw the ball for the dog. Don't run around with him.
I don't even know what kind of... Okay, I'm learning. See, this is why we love having Wendy Benjaminson on. She's the Bloomberg Politics editor. Wendy, what kind of dog does President-elect Joe Biden have?
He has a German Shepherd, and he's also bringing a cat to the White House.
A cat. So, I did see Michael LaRosa, who's an aide to the soon-to-be First Lady. Do you call them the First Lady-elect? I don't know. The First Lady, Dr. Jill Biden.
I think we should retire that term and just call her Jill Biden to me. But
okay.
Know,
so what do we know the pets' names in the last minute that I have with you?
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
I'll find out in the break, and then how about this? I'll Bloomberg email you on the terminal. I'll be you. How's that? I'm using my terminal to not only find all of the market data, but also to IB with Wendy Benjaminson. His dog's name is Major, according to our producer, Matt Shirley. And do we know the cat's name? We don't know the cat's name, so you're going to have to stick around. All right, Wendy Benjaminson, thank you so much for joining us and giving us an update, as well as a health update on all things COVID, as well as ankles and whatnot. And we'll catch up later, Wendy. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg app. You can also find me on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV and radio, and you're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
You're listening to Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving. Allison Waller in the New York Times. First, it was announced that Champ and Major, the German shepherds belonging to the president-elect and future First Lady Jill Biden, would roam the White House. And now, after an absence of more than a decade, a cat is set to also join the ranks of presidential pets. Jane Pauley of CBS Sunday Morning reported on Twitter on Friday. "I'd love to get a cat." That's what Dr. Biden told Fox 5 in Washington, D.C. exclusively. "I love having animals around the house." No one knows what kind of cat, but two dogs and a cat. Okay, now let's pivot into my Bloomberg terminal to talk about the markets. U.S. stocks fell from records as investors assessed the prospects for risk assets after a blistering month-long rally. The dollar strengthened. The S&P 500 dropped the most in more than a week, though the benchmark index still registered its best month since April. Global stocks and American small caps posted their best months on record. Broad selling sent the Dow Jones Industrial Average lower. The tech-heavy NASDAQ indexes that trailed in November fared better, briefly touching another record high on Monday. Gold slumped and Bitcoin rallied back to an all-time high. Joining us now on the hotline, Mark Summerlin, economist and managing partner of Evenflow Macro in Washington. Mark, thanks for being here. What happened in the markets today?
Well, I think you hit on it, Kevin, and first of all, thank you for having me. When you talked about the blistering month that we had in November,
yes.
And I think that the market basically repriced for the hope of the vaccine coming, for the election certainty, and a bunch of other things, and so there was a normal pause. But I do think there is a also looking forward to this brief period that we're going to have probably of economic contraction coming up. And I think that markets are starting to realize that expectations for Friday's employment report are just way too high. And one of the technical aspects to this is that the November employment report normally has a very big seasonal adjustment in it because of the normal Christmas hiring that happens or holiday season hiring. And that adjusts the number by about 400,000 jobs. And so it's a big wild card in terms of what number we're going to get. Expectations are for 500,000, but it could be something much closer to zero.
It's wow, zero. And especially, you know, there's so much unknown, and we won't have actually, let me ask you this. Will we have the data from Black Friday and Cyber Monday in this? No, we won't. We'll have to wait another month. But even the shift in retail and what we're seeing on cyber, I mean, there's just so much information that we don't have.
I think that's right. And it's really just the how much the pandemic and shutdowns is screwing with how the government calculates the numbers, and not from any conspiracy or anything like that, which will probably come out after the number in terms of other less credible websites. But it's just that there's this normal process that you try to smooth out the data, and it's a big, big adjustment in November, and it's just hard to get that right when a lot of people just aren't going out and shopping in person, so a lot of the hiring's not going to be done.
Mark Summerlin is with us. Mark Summerlin is a managing partner at Evenflow Macro. He had spent 10 years as managing director of the Lindsay Group, which is a global economic consulting firm. And during that time, he traveled extensively to Japan, China, and Europe. He also served in 2001 to 2002 as the deputy assistant to the president for economic policy, as well as the deputy director of the National Economic Council in the Bush administration. And so we're grateful, beyond grateful, to have him with us. I want to play for you, Mark, a portion of an interview that my colleague Emily Chang did with Gary Cohn, previously of the Trump administration, and about the need for more economic stimulus. Take a listen.
I desperately believe that we need more stimulus, and we need more stimulus today. I would beg Congress to go back to work and pass a stimulus bill this week. There's no time like the present. Dollars put back in consumers' pockets would be very, very important.
Mark Summerlin, do you believe that we desperately need economic relief?
I think everyone agrees that we need more relief and that we need a bridge to get us through to April. I think there's a lot of disagreement on what the size is, and I can give you ways of how I think about the size, but more importantly, we had a pretty big bet placed on the election. And pre-election, Secretary Mnuchin had offered Speaker Pelosi something close to $2 trillion, which she turned down based on an expectation of taking back the House, and I mean, keeping the House and taking back the Senate, which we still don't know the outcome, but most likely is that bet is going to have failed. And so just the political realities in Washington are that it's not going to be $2 trillion. Senator McConnell, or Majority Leader McConnell, has said that he prefers $500 billion, and that's the amount that unifies Republicans. And so somewhere in between $500 billion and $1.8 trillion, there is a number that can be done. And so far, just we have been unable to find a solution that solves everyone's political needs.
And even as we go more geopolitically, and someone like a Janet Yellen looks to get confirmation before the Senate Banking Committee, Republican-controlled, of course, to lead the Treasury Department, what are you going to be looking for geopolitically in terms of how she'll navigate her international portfolio, Mark?
Right. I mean, well, I think, first of all, I think Republicans generally had a sigh of relief when Janet Yellen was announced, because her roots came from the Bill Clinton administration as opposed to the modern monetary theory crowd. And so her confirmation hearing will be pretty easy, and she'll sail through. I think the most interesting thing about Ms. Yellen is that she has changed her views over time, and that's one of her strengths, that as the world changes and the macro environment changes, she adopts to it. And so in the 1990s, she argued that fiscal contraction was stimulus. Now she takes the other sides, and there's reasons for that. But the biggest question that is not known about her is, what is she going to say about the dollar? And as a former Fed chairman who believes that inflation is too low, saying that she believes in a strong dollar, as Larry Summers advocates, is not consistent at all. And so I think that'll be the biggest thing to watch about her as she moves through her confirmation hearing process.
So, and from a geopolitical standpoint, I mean, in the Treasury Department, obviously she'll also be leading CFIUS, and she'll be in charge of tariffs and whatnot and sanctions. And how will that come up, or how from a more geopolitical perspective,
yeah,
especially
yeah.
with China?
Yeah, I think the big question on China is how and when the tariffs can be removed. And so the tariffs were sort of non-conventional economic policy. I will make the point that sometimes is missed, that the U.S. can easily afford to put tariffs on China. It just can't afford to put tariffs on the whole world all at the same time. And so my view is that the Biden administration will probably be moving more towards human rights and keep the focus on technology issues. And so there's an opportunity for China to get the tariffs removed. But I doubt that the Biden administration would remove the tariffs without anything in exchange. And so I think part of her job will be to figure out something that both keeps the pressure on China to be a good actor, but also takes away one of those Trump-era policies that does have some economic harm and some legacy harm to it.
Fascinating. Janet Yellen's dollar diplomacy, both domestically and geopolitically, we are definitely going to be watching. It's what everyone, you just hit the nail on the head. That's what everyone's buzzing about from the investor perspective. And you know, here in Washington, I think in the geopolitical crowd, there's a lot of questions about China. But you're absolutely correct that I should be asking more about dollar diplomacy. Thank you so much to Mark Summerlin, economist and managing partner of Evenflow Macro in Washington, D.C. Always grateful to get his perspective. More next. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg 99.1.
Live from our nation's capital.
All talk here in Washington, D.C. turns to President-elect Joe Biden's administration. Historically speaking, the markets have performed better when there is divided government.
The biggest pressure for fiscal stimulus is an uptick in cases.
Bloomberg Sound On. The insiders, the influencers, the insights.
Biden has promised again and again that he will unite the country. State governments control elections. That's in the Constitution.
I think that we can expect a smooth, thoughtful, methodical transition.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
President-elect Joe Biden rolls out the first set of nominations for his economic team. Meanwhile, Fed Chairman Jay Powell sees significant challenges and uncertainties on the vaccines. This as U.S. stocks fall from record highs. We've got a lot to get through. We begin tonight with the big story. President-elect Joe Biden rolled out the first set of nominations for his economic team, formally announcing his selection of Janet Yellen to be Treasury Secretary, Neera Tanden to lead the Office of Management and Budget, and Cecilia Rouse to head the Council of Economic Advisors. Biden also announced his intent to nominate Adewale Adeyemo, a former senior advisor at BlackRock, to be Deputy Treasury Secretary. Adeyemo is a Nigerian-born attorney and president of the Obama Foundation. All of this comes as Fed Chairman Jerome Powell warns lawmakers that the U.S. economy remains in a damaged and uncertain state, despite progress in the development of COVID-19 vaccines. And he testified before the Senate Banking Committee in testimony that was released this afternoon that he will unveil tomorrow. In these opening remarks, he writes, quote, "Recent news on the vaccine front is very positive for the medium term. For now, significant challenges and uncertainties remain, including timing, production, and distribution, among other hurdles. We have sound on the vaccination front coming from Dr. Anthony Fauci, who said that there is a light at the end of the tunnel in an interview with Fox News Sunday.
There is light at the end of the tunnel because we will really be seeing vaccines soon. We likely, almost certainly, are going to be vaccinating a portion of the individuals in the first priority before the end of December.
U.S. Surgeon General Jerome Adams is promising a rapid December vaccine, and he also spoke with Fox News Sunday.
Within 24 to 48 hours after submitting their EUA, we, from a federal perspective, have promised and have set everything up so that we can quickly review those EUAs and hopefully start sending out vaccines, again, within 24 to 48 hours.
As Wall Street and Main Street and families across the country look forward to the optimism surrounding the vaccination front, more talk and warnings of fiscal stimulus, and our very own Emily Chang spoke exclusively with former National Economic Council Director Gary Cohn about confirming a Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen and whether or not they're going to need more fiscal stimulus, as Fed Chairman Jay Powell has warned.
I worked with Chair Yellen when she was chairman of the Federal Reserve. We worked extremely well together when I was in the White House. We had a very good working relationship. I find her to be very practical, very pragmatic, have a very deep and broad understanding of the U.S. economy. And I'm very confident that she's going to step in and do a very good job. She needs the help, though. She needs help of Congress to get stimulus going.
Isaac Wright is a Democratic strategist, partner at Forward Solutions Strategy Group, and co-founder of the Rural Voter Institute. We welcome him back to the program, along with Doug High, former Deputy Chief of Staff for former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor, and former Communications Director for the RNC. Doug, we just heard from Gary Cohn, who says that Janet Yellen is going to need help from Congress to get stimulus going. Are the Republicans in the Senate going to help her?
In the lame duck short-term period of things, it doesn't look like it. But I think what we're seeing is that there's a very very real situation that it isn't just now kind of coming. We are officially in winter, even if it's not 30 degrees outside. Businesses are being drastically affected, as you just can't do. You know, think of restaurants and things like that, where you just can't do things outdoors like you could in September, or even mid to late October. And that's going to put more pressure on Congress to act, and that's going to put pressure on Democrats. That's going to put pressure on Republicans, and ultimately, we'll have to figure out if we can get to somewhere between you know, where the Republicans were and the $2 billion that Pelosi was talking about. Isaac, maybe it's not cutting it down in the middle, but they have to reach a deal.
Isaac Wright, how will President-elect Joe Biden try to get some of those crucial Republican swing votes? I'm thinking of Senator Susan Collins and others on board in order to get a fiscal stimulus package through.
Well, look, I mean, it's very clear when you look at the state of the economy, when you look at the state of how people and businesses alike are reacting to the economic losses of the pandemic, that these senators should be compelled to do. I think Joe Biden just has to point out the reality of what our country is facing, and surely enough members of the U.S. Senate will recognize that and do the right thing. I know that sounds crazy to expect of Washington, but surely we can get enough votes to do the right thing that people are willing to rescue the economy from the perils we face in this pandemic. And that starts with addressing the very serious need, the very serious nature of a long-term stimulus package. Now, as was just said a moment ago, we have the opportunity in the lame duck session. There can be a few priorities that are tacked on to the regular spending bill. I mean, look, the federal government is nearly closing, I think, December 11th. Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's December.
Yeah. Federal budget.
12-11.
Yeah, if the federal budget isn't addressed. And this would be a terrible time in the midst of the pandemic, in the midst of a contentious presidential transition, to have an actual federal government shutdown. So there's the potential that some of these key programs involved in pandemic relief that are set to expire at the end of the year could be tacked on potentially to that bill and then the larger addressed in the new year. But I think Biden just has to carry the message of the American people that we need help right now, that politicians need to focus on the priorities of what matters in this country, and that's health and economics.
You know, you make a really good point, Isaac, in terms of just the dynamics of the Democratic Party right now. And Isaac is with us, and he, of course, has worked on Hillary Clinton's rapid response campaigns when she was running for president. And I know that you're familiar with some of the other names on the list that was unveiled today by President-elect Joe Biden, including Neera Tanden to lead the Office of Management and Budget. She currently leads the Center for American Progress here in Washington, D.C. I would argue that's a bit more of a centrist organization in Washington. I know some Democrats might disagree with that. But from your experiences, I mean, Republicans are speaking out to suggest that this confirmation of Neera would be dead on arrival. Do you think that she faces a more difficult path to the nomination than someone like a Yellen, Isaac?
Well, I mean, obviously there's the potential for that because there are certain elements that are willing to make politics more important in their own agendas than policy. And we just can't afford to let that happen. Look, Neera Tanden is one of the smartest people in Washington, D.C. She represents the country itself. Someone who used to be on SNAP benefits, who grew up in a household with SNAP benefits, now leading the Office of Management and Budget of this country. That's what we need to see, a diverse economic perspective that looks like the economic perspectives across the country. The decisions by the Biden administration to put together this economic team have been praised from everybody from Harvard economist Jason Furman to people like Bill Kristol, to the Republican member of Congress from North Carolina who heads the House financial team. You know, there has been widespread praise for the team that has been put together, Yellen, mm-hmm. Tanden, et cetera. Okay. And we need to move forward with this. It's time to start.
I'm just curious. We're going to get into this coming up on the program with Isaac and Doug. I'm curious to see which nominee the likely Republican controlled Senate will block, because there's always a handful that the opposition party will block. So I'm interested to see that. All right, panel stays. Download the Bloomberg Sound On podcast on Apple iTunes at Bloomberg.com or by downloading the Bloomberg Business app. You can also find us on radio.com, iHeartRadio, and Spotify. For all of our latest coverage on COVID-19, head on over to Bloomberg.com/coronavirus. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg TV and radio. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
The Philadelphia Eagles play tonight, and that means we're going to check in with Congressman Dwight Evans, a Democrat representing Pennsylvania's 3rd Congressional District in Philly, coming up in the next half hour. Congressman Evans, of course, will talk policy. And, of course, the birds with Kev. My name is Kevin Cerulli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television as well as Bloomberg Radio. Isaac Wright's with me. Doug, hi. Isaac's our Democrat. Doug is our Republican. I want to go geopolitics for a second, if I could, because there's this fascinating article in the Bloomberg Terminal that I was reading today about the tension that is mounting not just between the U.S. and China, but also between the U.S. and Australia. David Fickling writes on Bloomberg Opinion, more than 50 ships carrying Australian coal have been waiting for a month or longer to offload their cargo amid a diplomatic spat between Australia and China. China is planning to impose anti-dumping duties, are you ready for this, as high as 212.1%. on Australian wine. Its officials have blamed a host of grievances, including Australian media coverage. I guess they don't, it's a foreign concept to me. And the passing of laws preventing foreign political interference from, quote, poisoning, end quote, relations. I bring all of this up to the panel because it's really going to be a test of Tony Blinken's approach to international affairs, which is obviously a stark contrast to President Donald Trump's, who has taken a different approach when negotiating with China and when dealing with China. When I spoke with Antony Blinken over the summer, and now he, of course, is nominated to be Secretary of State, he said that he wants to take a more multinational approach. He wants to bring Europe back on board with the United States so that the U.S. and allies are arguing from the same or acting from the same geopolitical playbook. Isaac Wright, can Tony Blinken get that job done? And if so, how? Do we have Isaac? Doug High, are you with me?
Hey, we have Doug.
We have Doug. Doug, same question to you while we wait to get Isaac.
Yeah, I saw that article as well, and I saw that the parent company of Penfolds, who makes Grange, and by the way, if any listeners can afford a bottle of Grange, you're a better man than I am, better woman than I am. This highlights, I think, really the difficulty that we have coming out of, you know, the Trump years and how the go-it-alone approach that Trump has taken, has had, and what those ramifications will be. I think right now it's impossible to predict, are we going to have success or not. It definitely is working in partnership. Our allies have been clamoring for, and by the way, if we're going to talk about Penfolds, let's get rid of the tariffs on European wine and Italian, French Chablis, probably Christian Moreau, or Italian cheeses. Burgundy, we need to get rid of those tariffs here as well. But we do that by acting in partnership. And if we're not able to do that, as we've seen in the past few years, bad things happen. If we can do that, we can make good things happen. It's very difficult, especially after 4 years of an antagonistic relationship with your own allies.
Isaac, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. It's okay. But I mean, I want to put this question to you because Doug just outlined in terms of all of the you know, we joke about that industry, but it's incredibly important. And you're in Tennessee, which of course has been massively impacted by the whiskey tariffs and whatnot and the supply chain surrounding that industry. But my original question, I still want to get your take on it, which is how can a Biden administration look to reset the Western allies in order to negotiate or really to deal with the Communist Party of China?
Well, look, our allies are looking for leadership right now from the country. They've been without seeing it from the U.S. for 4 years, and that includes on economic issues and trade issues with China. I think our allies are looking for leadership and how to deal with that. And there are vast ramifications that we have only begun to scratch the surface of what the last 4 years of Trump means for misguided trade policy, right? Because not only when all of this issue and conflict with China, not only has it led to the direct tariffs and trade issues that we see there, but it leads to the renegotiating of China's relationships with other marketplaces, mm-hmm. right? The renegotiating of our trading with other marketplaces. It's not just that, for example, that China is buying less beef from the U.S., but they now have struck deals with the Brazilian beef industry, which has seen its largest economic gains in recorded history in the last couple of years, now supplying those marketplaces. So what happens when we try to redevelop these relationships? Will those markets again reopen to the U.S., and this is where we need our allies to come to bear. And that's why I think we're going to see progress made. It may be slow coming, but I think we should expect to see progress made in the Biden administration over the next 4 years.
And look, yeah, I think Kevin, Doug, go ahead.
Can I expand on that real quick? Yeah. You know, I've been reading over the past couple of days. Obviously, you know, everybody's paying as close attention as they can to Brexit and what's happening there. Uh-huh. And there's been talk about, well, is the Boris Biden relationship doomed from the start? And I don't think that it necessarily is. Obviously, there've been a lot of comparisons between how Trump and Boris Johnson kind of behave, and it start, you know, and that I think the comparisons tend to be pretty fickle. It starts with the hair and then goes on down from there. But a difference is, you know, that Joe Biden, if you come at him, you know, if you have different points of view, you can work with him. I've certainly seen that working with his office in the House. But you also know that you're not going to wake up to a tweet that absolutely sells you out. And I can tell you, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom knows that at any minute, the current president, you know, the outgoing president, could sell him out on a tweet and call him a loser or something else. He knows that, and I can speak to that because I told him that when he was the foreign minister. Said, if you ever become prime minister, you know that he could do this to you. And so this will be, you know, it may be a positive relationship. I think certainly it will be a more positive one. But it's not one that's going to be fraught with the tension, even though there will be disagreements of what is the president going to do next, where it could be anything and blindside anyone.
We have a minute left before the jump, but I have to ask this to Isaac. Does Hillary Clinton want in on the Biden administration?
I can't imagine so. I think she has her own place in American history that she has carved out, and a well-deserved place in American history that she has earned. I think she already is an elder states person. I can't imagine that she's looking to go back into the administration.
You know, and that's the question that I get from Republicans more than anything else in around the political water cooler. That truly has been a common thread that I've gotten over the past couple of weeks is does Hillary Clinton want to serve in the Biden administration, and what role would that be? All right, coming up next, we check in with Congressman Dwight Evans, a Democrat from Philly. I'm Kevin Cirilli. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the chief Washington correspondent for Bloomberg Television as well as Bloomberg Radio. Big, big night tonight, whether you're in Seattle or Philly. The Eagles take on the Seattle Seahawks in Monday Night Football. I said that means I have to check in. I have to check in with Congressman Dwight Evans, Democrat from Philadelphia's 3rd Congressional District. Of course, he's from Philly. We're both diehard Eagles fans. I know I have to talk politics, and I know our executive producer, Christine Barada, is just holding her breath, hoping I get through this Eagles fodder quickly. But I can't help it because this is a really huge game. Are we going to see Carson Wentz get benched tonight, Congressman?
No.
Why?
No, you're not. No, because, I mean, at the end of the day, look, it's a team sport, and the difficulties that have occurred has not singly been just on the quarterback. You know, need to be offensive line, defensive, special team, all of the elements coming together.
So you,
you
think,
know, there's not a single individual.
You think Peterson's not going to go all in on Jalen Hurts?
Well, I don't think that'd be fair because basically I don't think Hurts by himself can turn around and make that happen. And I think we would make a mistake throwing him in the game at this point. You know, if you're talking about down the line, fine. But at this point, Carson Wentz, in my view, we got to learn to stick with what we have. And, I mean, I think that sends a message to all of the players on the team. And I believe that Carson Wentz at this time should be the person to take this game on. This is a very important game. You know, yesterday with the New York Giants winning and Washington winning against Dallas, I mean, it's clear that, you know, this is a game we're still in it. Understand?
I know. I know.
It's very competitive.
Well, and I got to talk politics. I got to talk politics.
That's what I mean. Even in politics, that's why it's important because.
But Congressman, I'm going to do the pivot. I'm going to do the pivot, and you're going to follow it because you're on the same wavelength. I wake up this morning. I read my Delco Times. Okay, I read my hometown newspaper. You know, first thing I do, I got to know what's going on in Delco. And, you know, this columnist in the Delco Times, he said, who's the most popular player on a football team when the quarterback is struggling? You know who it is? The backup quarterback. I want to ask you this. What role and how popular is Vice President-elect Kamala Harris in the Democratic Party, and how will she be utilized in a Biden administration on policy?
I think she will be used very effectively. She has the experience as United States Senator. She's demonstrated that. I believe Vice President Biden, President-elect Biden, has shown because he himself was in that role. He understands the significance of having a person ready to play. And Senator Harris, in my view, is in that particular position. But I think that between both of them together, they understand where we are. As you know, right now we're at an interesting time. Mark Zandi, an economist,
yep,
who you know, with someone who wrote an op-ed piece today in the Philadelphia Inquirer, talked about the need of a rescue package. You know, he talked about being fair that the House has already passed it twice. So it's not like we haven't done things, but we got to get to work because our economy is very fragile, and we need not to take it for granted, and we need to do the things that we have to do.
Congressman Dwight Evans, a Democrat from Philadelphia, I'm going to do something that will shock you. I think I'm going to play a clip from my colleague, Emily Chang, who interviewed President Trump's former National Economic Council director, Gary Cohn. And I think you're going to agree with President Trump's former National Economic Council director, Gary Cohn, as he talks about fiscal stimulus. So I'm going to play it for you, Congressman, and I want your reaction. Yes. Here he is.
I desperately believe that we need more stimulus, and we need more stimulus today. I would beg Congress to go back to work and pass a stimulus bill this week. There's no time like the present. Dollars put back in consumers' pockets would be very, very important.
Do you agree with Gary Cohn?
Absolutely. There's not Democrat or Republican on this issue. We got to be about the American economy, you know, hoping that the president and the White House, 50-something days ago, is concentrated on this job for the people. President-elect Biden has indicated he thinks it needs to turn it down. So President-elect Biden and President Trump both agree on there's a need for a stimulus. So we got both. You heard what Gary Cohn said. You heard what Mark Zandi said. We all in this together, Garrett. And, I mean, the reality of it is, Kevin, we just need to work together and get this passed. We need to get it done yesterday.
I want to ask you about some of the restrictions that are happening in cities like Washington, D.C., as well as in cities like Philadelphia. And you are a member of the United States House Committee on Small Business. There are a lot of small businesses that agree with the science. They agree with the likes of people of Dr. Fauci, of President-elect Joe Biden, Vice President-elect Kamala Harris. They didn't participate in massive Thanksgiving gatherings. They're following the protocols, the CDC guidelines, but they're frustrated, Congressman. They're seeing these rules, and the rules don't make sense. They feel that some small businesses are being singled out for whatever reason, and that other small businesses are able to remain open with no restrictions. They can wear a mask for part of being indoors in one establishment. They can't do it in another. How do you talk to me about when you're talking to constituents who are frustrated with that? What do you tell them? Because that, especially this time of year, is incredibly frustrating for millions of Americans.
You know, basically what I said to them, Kevin, that this is a very difficult situation. And I think, you know, the fact of the matter, like President-elect Biden said, we're trying to beat the virus, not each other. That's important to remember. President-elect Biden said the task is to beat the virus, not each other. That comes in about science and the importance of it. So, Kevin, I understand the toughness, and I'm very sympathetic. So I share with you with the large amount of deaths that we have had. You know, we really need leadership. And in my view, President-elect Biden and Senator Harris are demonstrating. And this is not even, Kevin, I wouldn't tell anybody, as you just asked this question, that this is not easy. This is very, very difficult, particularly the impact that it's having upon the economy. You heard Mark Zandi, you heard Gary. Both of these economists, both agree. They both agree.
But I think what frustrates, I want to follow up on this because I think it's important. Because I think if you go up to New York City, Mayor de Blasio, I think what frustrates people when I talk to them is they see what is perceived as confusion. One day they're closing the schools. The next day they're opening the schools. One day they're closing the small businesses. The next day they're opening the small business. I mean, there doesn't seem to be a rhyme or reason from elected officials throughout the country, especially those who are in mayor's offices, making decisions that impact very small businesses.
And that's why when President-elect Biden met with the Executive Association of the governors just last week, yeah, Democrats and Republicans. He met with Democrats and Republican governors from red states and blue states and basically said we only have one state, the United States. So, Kevin, let's understand. We had a pandemic in 100 years. 100 years.
Yeah.
So this is extremely painful. I understand that. Look, I'm sympathetic to the small businesses. I'm vice chair of the Small Business Committee.
Yep.
I know the pain, particularly business of color. I understand that. But I stress the same message. We must beat this, and we will beat this with the vaccines that are there. The fact of the matter is that's something that I believe that the Ways and Means Committee will play a role. I'm on the subcommittee on health. I share with you. I come on your airways today to keep stressing the sad aspect of both. Right there. So we got to keep it up.
Congressman Dwight Evans, whether you support Carson Wentz or Jalen Hurts, we're still Eagles fans. Thank you, Congressman. I'm Kevin Cirilli. This is Bloomberg 99.1.
This is Bloomberg Sound On with Kevin Cirilli on Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2.
The Cranberries, a great song. My name is Kevin Cirilli. I'm the Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg Television and for Bloomberg Radio. My all-star panel for the hour is Isaac Wright, Democratic strategist, partner at Forward Solutions Strategy Group, and co-founder of the Rural Voter Institute. Doug High, also with me, former Deputy Chief of Staff for former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and former Communications Director for the RNC. Before we go to my favorite part of the program, which is what's on the panel's radar, I got to say, Doug, I heard that you sent a link on to a very interesting story about Rim Raider to our executive producer, Christine Barada. And here I am. I missed this in the post today. And I'm at the Willard earlier getting my coffee. You know, it's the one place to go. The Willard Hotel, the historic Willard Hotel, near where the Bloomberg Bureau is. They put out all of their incredible Christmas trees and everything. And no one's there. I mean, you know, downtown's a little not busy, but it looks beautiful, all of the Christmas decorations. And so I'm there with a friend today, and I'm reading the post, and I missed this story. So tell us about this Rim Raider, this beloved pandemic distraction that has now faced backlash courtesy of Jeb Bush.
Well, it was the craziest thing. So last weekend, before Thanksgiving, I was on CNN talking about, you know, post-election and so forth. And I
saw
got
you.
A 9 out of 10 on Room Raider, which I was quite happy with.
Congratulations.
But I actually found out about I found out later that Jeb Bush had tweeted at Room Raider that it was anti-Republican. And since I'm a Republican, I was surprised.
Jeb Bush. Who would have thought Jeb Bush making controversy? Jeb Bush, go ahead.
And so it made a big controversy. The Post wrote about it. Huffington Post reported about it. It's now being talked on Bloomberg Radio.
Appreciate
it. But I'm a Jeb Bush fan. I was before. I still am. I think he was a great governor, especially on education, which is one of those issues like health care that Republicans should talk about.
What's Jeb Bush been up to?
I think he's been enjoying not being in the fray.
Okay. Yeah, but then they get bored and then they want to get back into the fray. Then they jump back into the fray.
Obviously,
which
Hillary
is why,
Clinton doesn't. We've
well, that's what I was going to say to Isaac. You know, there's, you know, once it's in their blood, they like, I mean, this is what they do. You know, you can't sit on the sidelines. They're players, Isaac. They're players.
Oh, I think Hillary Clinton has established a tremendous legacy already. I think hopefully some of Biden's recent appointments already reflect that and will continue to. I think she is one of the elder leaders in our country, elder statespeople who will go down with a tremendous place.
Isaac, have you been rated on Room Raider?
I have not. I'm a little disappointed. I don't think I make the cut. My Zoom interviews, my Skype interviews do not apparently warrant a rating from Room Raider.
Isaac, what's on your
radar? I
don't
know if that's because I'm so good or so bad.
It's okay. It's okay.
On my radar, a couple of things. One on the nerdy campaign level, which is I think there's still a deep dive analysis going on of the Democrat strategy this time that involves only real person, live door-to-door canvassing, those kind of things in the last couple of weeks. How did it play out, right? Biden won. Democrats dramatically underperformed in U.S. House races, in state legislative chambers across the country. So how does that factor or not factor into that equation? That is a big question that's looming out there still amongst political consultants, that is being debated amongst campaign strategists, that will continue to be debated. But it will have a lasting footprint on how we go about campaigns in this country for decades to come, how that question is determined. The other thing I think that we see out there to pay attention to is what happens to that critical coalition of red state and rural voters that Trump tried to bring about again the way he did in 2016 and couldn't quite get there. How does that group play out in the early days of a Biden administration? Early days being the first 6 to 12 months, right? Do we see Trump's base there erode? And do we see the Democratic coalition continue to make inroads and expand? We saw Democrats actually move up slightly with rural voters in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Arizona in the last election. But largely things got worse for Democrats with rural voters across the country in this last election. At least that's what the data looks like so far. What is going to happen in the next 6 to 12 months in this new administration that may impact that for the long term? Critical for Democrats.
Fascinating.
Future.
That's incredibly fascinating. Doug, what's on your radar?
My radar is all about December the 5th. That's when Donald Trump goes to Georgia. Ostensibly to help the two Republican Senate candidates. So what to look for is that what he does, or does he spend more time talking about rigged elections, stolen elections, and all the other stuff, which means that the Republican Senate candidate can't talk about being a check and balance against the Biden administration because they're still not able to concede that there's going to be one. And what does that do for the election?
That's a fascinating one. And what do you think? I mean, just – what do you think, Doug, will happen with that?
Well, you know, we saw in the interview with Maria Bartiromo yesterday, Trump paid some lip service to Kelly Loeffler and David Perdue and then went on to talk about stolen elections and all this other stuff. And it wasn't stolen, obviously. And I sort of expect the same. He will say the right thing that he needs to for a sentence or two, and then he'll go back to talking about his favorite topic, which is himself.
But, I mean, this is, I mean, in many ways, if for President Trump, I mean, his success in the short term as a kingmaker in 2022, as well as if he wants to keep his own ambitions open for 2024, really do hinge a lot on Georgia, no?
In theory, yes. But the reality is we don't know what Donald Trump wants to do next. He may be done with politics altogether. He may just want to keep everybody talking about it. So potentially this could be one last kick in the butt before he leaves.
That's
really a technical political term.
And there's a great story out on the Bloomberg Terminal that I was reading earlier today that notes that some Wall Street Democrats are actually sitting out the Georgia Senate race, which is only it's interesting to see just how a Republican-controlled Senate would impact the ability for progressives to try to move President-elect Joe Biden to the left. And again, the check and the balance that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell would serve should Republicans have access or should Republicans have the majority in the Senate. Here's what's on my radar. It's a vessel, a pipe layer, and it's named the Academic Chersky. And this is a Russian ship that has been sailing for the past year from Russia's far east around Africa to the Baltic Sea. It's a pipe layer, and it's involved in the creation of the $11 billion Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Obviously, Americans do not want to see this pipeline come to fruition. I'm going to ask my panelist who has me on speaker to take it off just so we can get a little bit of a better of a sound connection. Now, the academic Chersky is shuttled between an anchor point off Russia's Kaliningrad and the German port of Mukran. And in recent months, according to Dow Jones, U.S. officials have readied broader sanctions. Members of Congress, including the likes of Senator Ted Cruz, have been lobbying for there to be additional sanctions should this vessel get to the Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which Americans are arguing would be a much more would really allow for Europeans to be Russian energy dependent, which obviously would have geopolitical concerns. It's fascinating because we mentioned these ships and we mentioned these policy developments happening around the world. And folks, we have to remember that they're happening in real time, that right now this ship is out there and that these geopolitical tensions, as we report on confirmations, as we report on appointees, there are real implications to all of it. My thanks to Isaac Wright, Democratic strategist, partner at Forward Solutions Strategy Group and co-founder of the Rural Voter Institute, Doug High, former deputy chief of staff for former House Majority Leader Eric Cantor and communications director for the RNC, also a critic of Room Raider. Found that out today. Go Birds, Eagles, let's go, beat the Seahawks. Congressman Dwight Evans, thank you. Democrat representing Pennsylvania's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Kevin Cirilli, Chief Washington Correspondent for Bloomberg TV and Radio. You're listening to Bloomberg 99.1.